Calling to order the City of Bainbridge Island City Council study session of April 17, 2013. Present are council members Blair, Lester, Blossom, Bonkowski, and Ward. Council member Scales will be late. Council member Hytopoulos has an excused absence. So this is a study session this evening. We'll be seeking comments from the audience on each major agenda item. The comment period on each item will be after the staff presentation and before the council discussion. If you'd please limit your comments to 3 minutes and keep your comments civil. We don't want to have any disparaging comments about other individuals. So are there any modifications to the agenda? Council Member Lester.
I recommend moving staff intensive item D to a future council meeting after May 9th, as the city manager is not present and the item is on the May 9th Civil Service Commission agenda. And I listened to the March 14th recording of the Civil Service Commission, and primarily they were talking about that they need to fill the position and that they were looking to provide some guidance to the council. And there was a commissioner that did make a suggestion regarding the city manager appointment, but in terms of having a full discussion, they haven't had that, and they are, like I mentioned, they will be addressing this item on May 9th. So I think our discussion should follow their recommendation.
Okay. Any other modifications to the agenda? Steve?
Yes, I'd like to add a item 5C, which is a discussion of the format for the SMP public hearing. I believe that's scheduled in 3 weeks. I'd like to get that discussed.
Okay, any other council member left?
I move to accept the agenda as amended.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any conflicts of interest to disclose relating to this meeting? Seeing none, we'll move on to item 3A, National Poetry Month, once again. It's always a nice way to start off the meeting.
So
welcome.
I'm so glad that you're open to this. Tonight we have two students from Odyssey, and I can say is there's no better people to write about mischief than two sixth graders. So I hope you enjoy their two poems. And Cosette Miller will come up first, and then Evan Bergen Epstein.
Welcome.
Thank you. Okay, my poem is Mischief, and if Mischief was a character, he would have shifty eyes. He would cast untrustworthy shadows from his spot in the skies. But his guilty smile would tell you that he meant no great harm, only to have a little fun. That's how mischief works its charm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Evan, and my poem is titled Mischief. Hiding, sneaking, tiptoe, tiptoe, tiptoe. Peek out, mother out of sight, father gone, sister nowhere to be found. Eyes on the prize. A bold move, exposure, all clear. Evil grin, working quickly, crash! Uh-oh. Run, run, run. Mother comes out just in time to see a child form slip into his room as if no one saw anything.
Thank you. That was wonderful.
So it's always a pleasure to hear those. Item 3B is a presentation on performance measures by Tom Nelson and Bill Bowe from New Pathways. So I don't know who's going to do the talking, but welcome to both of you.
Thank you. And perhaps we can provide a little more mischief for the couple to consider. Good evening. It's very nice to be with you this evening. We'd like to spend a few minutes talking about the concept of a high-performance organization.
Could you move the mic up a little bit?
Yes.
Thank you.
Sorry. Shall I start over or with you here? Okay, thank you. Why we think it would benefit substantially the city of Bainbridge Island and how it could be pursued on a risk-free basis. My name is Bill Bowe. My partner is Tom Nelson, and our company is New Pathways. Tom, in a minute, is going to give you a brief PowerPoint presentation, and we'd be happy to entertain any questions you might have. If the issue is what's the value proposition, when we talk about a high-performance culture, there's really four potential advantages. One of them is it has the effect of improving public engagement and public trust. That's a net benefit. Second, it has the effect of enhancing the internal efficiency of the departments that comprise city government. Third, there's an element of financial stewardship. And fourth, there's a learning and growth process that occurs as part of this. In terms of the proof statement, the HPO model has been, it began in the private sector, and today two-thirds of the Fortune 100 companies apply this, but it's also migrated into the public sector, and perhaps the best example of it is the city of Charlotte, and we rely on their experience heavily as we move forward into this thing. But you don't need to look all the way across the country to find an example of it either, because the city of Redmond has adopted a high-performance model as well. And the proof is kind of in the pudding, because the last time they took a public survey, they found that there was 74% satisfaction rate with the services provided by city government. And that's an impressive figure, and they attribute that largely to the adoption of a high-performance culture model. Where the police department is concerned, in the last year they've had a 27% reduction in crime. We know this because we had a one-hour meeting with their police chief, and it was just very impressive. The common elements, if you look at these high-performance organizations, whether you call them a balanced scorecard, which is the one we favor, that's the Charlotte model, or the budgeting by priorities, which is the Redmond model, or other permutations, are three things. First, the use of cross-functional teams. Second, performance metrics, which are scrupulously measured. And third, employee empowerment. Those are the common elements, the common themes that run through a high-performance culture and make it strategic. Now, that, in the broadest sense, is what a high-performance culture is about. And Tom, now I'll step aside and let Tom fill in some of the details. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you very much for the time that you allotted for us tonight to move through this quickly and leave some time open for questions. As Bill mentioned, our mission is to help public and private entities find solutions. Our background is both in large Fortune 100 companies and in smaller regional companies. And our experience is primarily revolving around performance optimization, change management. Bill has an extensive background in addition to labor relations, and I have something of a background in operations and operations excellence. What makes us different? The difference is we think of ourselves as people that move from current state to optimal state and help organizations get there. Rather than do a snapshot and come in and consult and give you a baseline analysis of what you have, which is very important, obviously, we like to be engaged in the next step of that whole process, which is creating change. Kind of background as to how we got here. You hired Doug Schultz this past year, October, November time frame. We started talking with Doug about that time. We've had ongoing conversations with him. We talked about a lot of things he wanted to accomplish. Looked at your strategic goals, which you've outlined previously, looked at the subject matter of the retreats that you've had, and determined that, in fact, Doug clearly indicates a high-performance organization is in his gun sights going forward, is something that he wants to accomplish. And in fact, it's listed in the priorities he submitted to you for Q1 and Q2 of this year. We then engaged with Doug as far as a conversation about how we could help the city of Bainbridge move in that direction. just a general overview and quick overview of an HPO, high performance organization. Strategically focused, it can be both in private or public sector, and there are plenty of examples of both. It's critically important that there is executive sponsorship at the council level, at the city manager level, and that really is what drives the process in its infancy. The goals are determined by city council based on the input that they have from the community, and those priorities are set early in the game. And cross-functional teams are subsequently tasked with breaking down those goals into team and individual initiatives that support each one of those goals directly and can be tied back to them and can be measured in a manner that shows that they're successfully working towards the achievement of those goals. As Bill mentioned, most Fortune 100 companies use it. GE, the banks, most of the major banks, most of the major oil companies. And the reason we give credit to Charlotte Mecklenburg up here is because they're the pioneers. They started out in 1996 with this process and created a great path for many of us to follow in terms of what they discovered along the way and the successes and failures they incorporated. But they've been using it now successfully for 16 years. Just a quick visual on what we're talking about. Mission, obviously, is the purpose of why the entity exists. Values in terms of what we decide is most important, and vision about where we want to get to. The rest of it flows through in terms of how it cascades down through the organization down to the individual employee level. And we'll talk to that point here shortly. How does it differ? Well, it differs in that it, at its heart, it has to have measurable criteria that is predetermined to be important, the critical factors that drive the organization towards success, factors that are accurately and timely measured, and that's critical to this whole process, as frequently as they can be measured that provide input as the direction of where you're going. And moving, I'm not saying that it's an absolute in terms of elimination of organizational silos, but because of cross-functional team use, it breaks down organizational silos within organizations that have existed, you know, for eons, and creates that atmosphere in which employees can work together, not necessarily in their own department, but in support of other departments to provide input and thinking outside the box in terms of what, how you approach a problem, how you solve it, and how you actually create a positive energy within that team. And most importantly, I think, just to touch on this, because there's not a slide just dedicated to employees. In our opinion, what HPO does for employees, it provides certainty, it provides organizational clarity in terms of what the organization wants to do, and gives employees the bigger picture overall of how they roll up underneath that organization and how they support the organizational goals. Their jobs day in and day out are critically important, but to give them that opportunity to understand the direction the organization is moving to over time is a benefit to them that has to be recognized early on in this process. How does it benefit the community? Well, when the initial roll-up on the mission, vision, values is created, there is community input, and there should be community input. Because in the end of the day, you want that input to help shape your opinions on what the priority should be for that coming year. If followed correctly, it should drive building a public trust, because there is that collaborative effort that takes place between citizens and their representatives in a positive format that asks people in a respectful manner to provide input, to determine priorities, and then understand that everyone has that same opinion on what's going to be worked on in the coming year or the coming 2 years. It should help communities understand some of the budgetary constraints that governments are faced with. There's a limited number of dollars out there, and how they're spent should match up with the priorities everyone's agreed on going into the process. And lastly, it names and measures initiatives that city government is pursuing on behalf of those citizens. We kind of fast forward here to how we've looked at approaching this, because I'll be the first to tell you that we've been engaged in an outside-in viewpoint up to this time period. We've talked to a lot of people, but we haven't really gained clear access to a lot of data other than what we can pull from the website, and we've looked at that. But to really do the right job in all this is to look at this as a beta test within a particular department, and in concert with the city manager, that department head, or whomever is designated as representative of that department, then start to drill down to the real vital factors, the deliverables that are really the mission of that department, that roll up and support the priorities that you've previously indicated back in January, the ones that you felt were most important. And those four should speak to the items that I have listed up there in terms of building public confidence, driving internal efficiencies and improved processes, creating an atmosphere of better financial stewardship, and then continuous and learning and improvement really is directed towards employees in terms of what training can be provided to make them more effective contributors to this process over time, that even creates more momentum behind it. So in terms of the deliverables, it's critical that the key metrics be identified. Some examples, and they are in brief, the ones you're certainly familiar with, is public surveys. Now, what portion of the budget and how does that department roll up within that budget for the city? Pre-existing departmental statistics would be another metric that you would look at. And then, of course, there's lots of best practices out there to pull from that can be brought into this identification of key metrics. Then, of course, cross-functional teams would be the next step in terms of looking at these, dividing them up, assigning accountability for them, and beginning the process of measuring them. And lastly, I'll come back and speak to this cost range, because I apologize for the... There were several iterations of this balanced scorecard. You're going to have to look at the ones on your screens up there, and I apologize to you all out here that it's not any clearer. But basically what you're looking at is an example of a balanced scorecard. In this case, it would be for a police department. In this case, the categories on the left-hand column are clear in terms of their goal of building public trust or reducing crime, or they could be improving overall training. There's a number of them there, but we spared you the time necessary to look at 30 or 40 of these. But each one can have metrics developed around them to measure clearly where their baseline and where they're moving to. Lastly, I'll move back to that point on defining cost range. Bill and I spent a lot of time on this, and if we were pressed, we could certainly swag a number for you. You could challenge its validity, and we would probably agree to certain extent. We think what's important is, on a go-forward basis, determine if the council has interest in pursuing this high-performance organization model. And if you do, then we would certainly be willing to identify that department, have it identified for us, have those key individuals that are the subject matter experts, along with the city manager and other key individuals within city government, help us develop those deliverables, agree to the deliverables as being the most important ones that should make up the scope of work. And we will then drive the scope of work to drive the hours to drive the cost estimate on what it would take to roll out a beta test. We mentioned the beta test, quite frankly, because there's risk mitigation involved in that approach. And there's cost mitigation involved in that approach. And we think that given the opportunity to view the results of a successful beta, you will be convinced that the payback you see through using this method will exceed any investments you put into it to create it. Any questions?
Thank you, Tom. Do we have any council questions?
Well, I think, at least from my perspective, I mean, this is, I came from, I've got my, I came from an industry that did this sort of thing, and I know it works in the industry. Clearly, a lot of the comments that I've made at the retreats have been along cost of service, measurables, and those kinds of things. So I think this is this approach, I think, satisfies, at least from my perspective, the management organization kinds of things that we were asking Doug to do. I think that I would certainly encourage the city manager to spend some more time to flesh out something that that we could decide if that was something we wanted to do or not. So I could certainly support that next step with the city manager. And unfortunately, well, we have an acting city manager right now, and so but that's my take on the presentation.
Thank you.
Any other comments, Debbie?
Certainly the old adage, what is measured gets done. So certainly this falls into going forward to looking to have some performance measures and some performance goals. Yes, I support as well having the city manager look further.
Okay. Any
citizens? Oh, okay.
I'm kidding. Hey, do we have any public comment on this topic? Okay. Seeing none, I'll thank Tom and Bill for their time and encourage you to be in contact with our city manager. And
thank you. Thank you for,
go forward.
For your time.
Thank
tonight.
You.
Thank you.
So our next presentation is by, beginning of a discussion is by Mark Blatter from the Housing Resources Board. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you, Councilmember Ward and other council members. Good to see you all again. Appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight for Housing Resources Board to be invited to speak, and it'll be quite brief. I'm here, and I don't have a formal presentation. Oh, thank you. Somebody has created one for me, with at least with the site aerial there. We simply want to propose to the council and to encourage the restart of the discussion about uses and disposition of the city-owned Suzuki property. As you know, it's a surplus to the city's needs. There was some discussion that we were involved in last fall with a couple of other groups to look at how this property could be developed to satisfy some community needs and provide some public benefits. Housing Resources Board has had an interest for some time in developing affordable housing on a portion of the site, and we maintain that interest. And I think another idea or concept was presented to you that came out of those discussions last fall. We just hope that at this time the council can, with our help and involving other community voices groups, start a discussion to identify potential uses, users for the property, and see if we can move forward to develop a plan that would lead to its development.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Steve?
Do you have, that's a really broad sort of thing. Are you thinking of another Ferncliff Village kind of a thing, or do you have any boundary at all in your thinking?
We do. On the housing side, it would take just a modest portion of the site. So we're looking at a size or scope of a project similar to phase one of Ferncliff Village, so 24 affordable housing units. We'd like to find a way to incorporate those into the site with other uses there to share access, certainly maybe some parking. We think that housing and other uses can fit well on this site and its 14 acres and still allow for preservation of some open space and the development of trails and other things. And that's about as far as we've thought at this point on the housing side.
Okay. Steve?
Part of the reason I asked the question that way is I remember it was about a year or so ago we had a very heated discussion about the Ferncliff project and measurables. Was it a success? Was it not successful? On the idea of coming back and doing a postmortem is not exactly the right word, but a discussion of whether that was successful. And I think getting that done would then give us, from a council standpoint, some fodder to where we want to go in the future. So I would encourage actually both the city, because I think Kathy Cook, who is sitting in the back there. Kathy was talking about doing some measurables on the success or how the Ferncliff project turned out. So I would encourage HRB to work with that and try to get that put together.
Okay. Okay.
Sarah?
Do you mean how Ferncliff worked out with regards to the HDDP?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep, that's exactly what I mean. Because I think what we're talking about, if the concept is to continue that model and the potential of using city property in lieu of, that was donated property, I think, from a resident. I think having that history now on its success or things that need to be changed, I think would be very useful in council's deliberation if this is the way we want to proceed. And that's the reason I'm bringing that up in that fashion.
Ann?
Obviously, with about 14 plus acres there, it sounds as though from the materials that you provided to all of us, which I appreciated getting in advance, so thank you for that. I wonder about other groups that you've talked to at this point. Are you coming to us, or have you had an opportunity to talk to other groups in the community that have indicated they'd like to work on this? I'm asking that knowing that there's at least one that in the past has shown an interest, so I don't mean to be coy about it, but I don't know their interest currently, and I wonder if you have other groups in the community that have talked about it or neighborhoods around that, anything at all other than coming to us and saying, let's all get together and begin this conversation.
We don't have specific groups at this point that we're talking to.
Okay.
We were in conversation last fall with the Parks District and with the group now known as, or calling itself BARN, the Bainbridge mm-hmm. Artisans Resource Network, I think. I'm not sure of their current plans. I think there may be continuing interest on their part there, but and I acknowledge it's somewhat of an awkward conversation to begin without those other potential partners there, but we see the process as a way to identify and ask those folks to come forward and participate if indeed
and from
they're,
your
they're
perspective
there.
Beg your pardon, David.
No, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. From your perspective, is there has the response to Ferncliff and that particular approach to developing land on the island, has it worked well? Has there been a large market for that? And have you found yourself wishing you had more?
Well, I think we will be wishing that we had more. We are nearing the completion of the home ownership sales at Ferncliff Village. We had a bit of a slow sales period over the holiday season, but at this point, we have buyers lining up for all of the remaining homes, and that means that we'll complete and sell on our original schedule.
So and obviously that's a part of what I think Steve was talking about and wanting to have, you know, a more formal report as it relates particularly and helpfully to the HDDP. But I'm just thinking that in some ways it would give us some sense of, other than you've noticed a very beautiful piece of property or not so beautiful piece of property and had an idea. So I wondered, you know, what other impetus was there. And it's because you all would like to develop it and can imagine some commercial value to it?
Commercial value. We're residential developers. We see that value there. We think in the future there will be a continuing demand for the type of affordable home ownership opportunities that we can provide on a land trust. I think a little bit of our challenge at Ferncliff Phase 1 was an additional requirement that most of those homes be developed and affordable at 80% of median income through one of our financing sources. It was a bit of a challenge to find buyers at that level who actually considered themselves ready and able to purchase a home. It can be a fairly narrow window for someone who needs to make less than a threshold of 80% of median income who can still afford a mortgage for that home. But that was a requirement from funding sources and not necessarily part of a future development there. We think there's plenty of demand for homes in that 80 to 120% of median income.
Good. That's helpful to know. Thank you.
Mark, what can we do as a council to help move this conversation forward? What would you like us to do?
Well, I think that we envisioned or thought that a group of council members might form a committee or a task force to meet regularly and start defining a process to identify those future uses and determine the path for making the property available for some of the uses and some development.
Chair.
Okay, thank you. Gabby?
The previous city council did do a review of our city-owned properties and made recommendations. So I suggest that the council pull that document out and look at it again and see what kind of guidance that gives to us in this discussion. And certainly there are agencies that potentially could collaborate and leverage. It could be a public-private opportunity here. Serving on the board of Housing Kitsap, that might be an agency that could help leverage opportunities for us as well. I would certainly be interested in serving on such a task force if the council chooses to go forward.
Okay. Any other comments from the council? Are there any public comments on this?
I have a question versus that intersection of the
pictures. Oh, okay.
It's at the intersection of New Brooklyn and Sportsman Club. It's kind of kitty corner from
Woodward School.
Yes. It's where the Suzuki Trail was put in, the citizen volunteer trail that was created.
I like to think it's across from where the Rotary Auction is held.
That's a pitch.
Okay. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think there is definitely interest in continuing the discussion. So. So we're going to move on to item 4A, Shoreline Master Program Consistency Matrix. Kathy Cook from Planning will. Who's going to do it, Ryan or Kathy?
I'm going to.
Okay.
Good evening, City Council. I'm Kathy Cook from the City Planning Department. As you know, City Attorney Jim Haney has reviewed the draft Shoreline Master Plan update for consistency with the requirements of the Washington State Shoreline Management Act, shorthand SMA, and the Department of Ecology guidelines, which are contained in the WAC 173.26. He's also reviewed the update for internal consistency with the comprehensive plan. At last week's study session, the City Council requested that a brief study session be scheduled for this evening to discuss the City Attorney's analysis. His analysis was provided to you under separate cover last night. It's also been posted to the SMP webpage and sent out to a very extensive listserv. The result of Mr. Haney's analysis is that the update is consistent with the Shoreline Management Act and the Department of Ecology guidelines. City Attorney Haney did recommend a few minor changes to improve consistency, which I'll go over very quickly. Mr. Haney also found that the update to be consistent with the various elements of the comprehensive plan, with one recommendation, which I'll also review. So you'll see up on the overhead the matrix that was provided or developed by our city attorney. The asterisk denotes a policy in which he feels there needs to be modification. So first, page 2 of the matrix, policy 1.34, he noted that there's a typographical error in referring to an RCW citation. So then moving to page 4, he recommended that staff include in the record a comparative analysis to confirm that the shoreline designations being used by the city in the update meet the overall purpose and policies of the shoreline designations established by the appropriate WACs. Staff had already planned on doing this, and that analysis will be included in this submittal to the Department of Ecology. Page 10 of the matrix. If you could turn to page 11. I'm sorry, Ryan, it's on the next page at the top. Mr. Haney recommended that rather than using and, we change it to or so that it's clear that an applicant has a choice as to whether to preserve or enhance shoreline vegetation.
Okay.
Also on page 11 of the matrix, policy 6.3, he recommended that the language be more specific pertaining to new piers and docks, that new piers and docks shall be allowed only for water-dependent uses and public access. This change was also recommended in the consistency analysis that was performed by the consultant firm ICF earlier in the update, and this is a change that we've already made to the draft that will be released prior to the public hearing. Moving to the comprehensive plan analysis, he looked through all of the various elements in the comprehensive plan. He noted that in the environmental element, Goal 1, Policy EN1.2, there is a mitigation sequence which is quoted in that policy, which is slightly out of sync with the state mitigation sequence. So he's recommending that we correct that to put the order so that it matches the state order, and also to add a monitoring component. Staff will make that change, and we're considering whether we can do that in the current 2013 amendment cycle or whether we should do it in 2014. So those are all of his recommendations. As he stated in his cover memo to you, he's doing some additional analysis, which he intends to provide to you shortly. Mr. Haney couldn't be with us tonight, but Kristen Ike from Ogden Murphy Wallace is here. And so if you have any follow-up questions or clarifications, you might want to direct them to Kristen.
Mr. Bonkowski.
Well, actually this, you picked up all the ones that I had in my, I did have one question on the bottom of 3 into page 4. It says that staff proposed to add language to the designation boundary section to provide if there is no shoreline environment designation on the map, the property is designated as Shoreline Residential Conservancy, and this is consistent, which requires urban conservancy designation. What percentage of the properties right now don't have a designation? Everything I heard is every address out there, whether it's developed or isn't developed, has got a designation.
Yes, we've made every effort to make sure we capture all the parcels on the shoreline. This is a requirement of the WAC, just in case if there's like a subdivision of property that doesn't get designated later on, that it would fall into this until we catch the air, or until it comes to the homeowner brings it to our attention. It's just a safety net.
Okay, so there wasn't anything, there wasn't a missing piece of property out there?
No, I've been around that quite a few times now.
So. Okay, thank you. And
I think this is a very, very useful analysis and can be quite helpful to us, but there's at least a couple of us sitting up here that had a slightly different expectation for the analysis, and I don't know whether it needs, we need to be, I was expecting that we'd get back a document that identified and helped us clarify any internal inconsistencies within the document. I mean, I think it's also extremely useful to know if it's meets legal requirements, but I'm also curious about how we would go about getting some sort of examination done of internal inconsistencies where there may be conflicts between 10 feet here and 25 feet there, and resolving those before it, you know, before somebody has to do battle over them.
So there was a previous consistency analysis done by ICF that doesn't quite speak to what you're referring to, but I'll get to your answer. The ICF consistency analysis looked at the existing SMP, compared to the DOE checklist to see where revisions were needed, and then after the Planning Commission completed their deliberations, ICF went back and verified that their recommendations met any identified deficiencies between the document and the DOE guidelines. In terms of internal inconsistencies, we're working on that at the staff level quite intensely, reviewing each chapter, doing cross-checking between section references, and we've been working on that for quite some time now.
Okay, thank you, Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
Anne, do you have a comment?
Well, my question was, I don't know what ICF is. I'm sorry.
That's a consultant firm.
Okay, all right.
We entered into a contract with them.
All right, thank you.
And I'm sorry, I don't know what ICF is.
No, I thought, wait a minute, is that what you're talking about, or is that a process?
No,
I apologize.
So we've done a staff analysis, plus the ICF analysis, plus Mr. Haney's analysis, plus our ongoing review.
Thank you.
ICF stands for International Consulting Firm.
Oh, that's easy.
Steve.
The other thing I did notice, and you know, Haney said it was all consistent, but there was a lot of discussion about it, and that was the use in a number of places of the word restoration. And I would encourage when that occurs, just like in, you know, Haney made the comment. This was on page 6 of 14, 413, and it talked about concerns have been raised about the use of the term restoration. Statement regarding vegetation management as included in restoration does not appear to be regulatory. It defines what kinds of things are included, and vegetation management does not require any particular development. Again, you know, he's standing back and making the assumption it's not regulatory. Somehow, when we're using the word restoration, I think we need to be very careful, and you can do a word search and look for restoration and make sure that kind of thought is surrounding the use of the word restoration.
Okay, we can do that.
Okay.
Any other council comments?
Let me check.
Okay.
I don't think you... I had a question on page 5 of 14, 4124. I don't think that was one you picked up. We're proposing to add language requiring a mitigation sequence of 4126 be used, then no net loss of shoreline functions occur. I'm not quite sure what that means in that point. It sounds like we're adding something. Can you clarify that a little bit?
Yeah, as part of the ICF analysis, they wanted a more direct link between our mitigation sequence and the regulation requiring the mitigation. It was kind of a vague link in the Planning Commission draft, and so we made an actual direct link to that section.
Is the mitigation sequence, is that the, if you will, the prescriptive mitigation, or is it just the sequence of how you do mitigation in a more of a philosophic way?
It is more of a project planning phase
okay.
approach. Avoidance first, and then
okay.
rectify, reduce.
What I was concerned about is, you know, we spent some time associated with doing mitigation and trying to be very prescriptive about that. But if you didn't want to do that, you could bring in your own, and there were rules about how to do that. And that's still all in there that way.
That's all in there. This is before you get to
okay,
compensatory
that's what
mitigation.
It's more philosophical in terms of this is more of a process thing. It's not the prescriptive portion.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Just a second, I'm sure. On page 8 and 9, 423, talking about tying parking facilities to no net loss standards. I know we've had a number of discussions about parking and the parks district. And this is all consistent with all that. That's the, okay. I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, we agreed last week we wouldn't be taking public comment on this at this time. So we'll move on to the next item, 4B. Contract amendment relating to energy efficient conservation block grant contract. Planning.
Yes, thank you. This is before you at the request of Kitsap County to bring our energy efficiency loan loss reserve agreement into conformance with some changes that are made at the county level. So any applicants to the loan program have the same set of requirements and submittal documents as other jurisdictions participating in the program. In 2010, the city was awarded a $100,000 contract from the State Department of Commerce. The purpose was to establish a loan loss reserve program to support low-interest loans to homeowners and commercial businesses interested in energy efficiency upgrades. The purpose of the loan loss reserve is to serve as a guarantee against defaulted loans. This resulted in an agreement with the county and with Kitsap Credit Union. $100,000 of the funds were transferred to the credit union to leverage up to $2 million in the energy efficient loans. At the end of 2012, 18 loans were funded. I think several more have been funded since then, for a total of $198,481. There have been no defaults on the loan. Therefore, the loan loss reserve program hasn't been used. The loan program is ongoing. They continue to make loans, and in fact, they've just done sort of a PR campaign to get more people to participate. But because our full $100,000 has been transferred to the credit union, our portion of it is considered to be complete, other than submitting annual reports. However, because that loan program continues and we are a party to the agreement, they have asked that we modify our agreement, and the details of the modifications are included in your agenda packet to be consistent with other jurisdictions who are participating. The contract amendment before you will not incur any additional financial responsibilities from the city. It will not impact staff workloads. Our continuing responsibility is to submit those annual reports. And that what we are requesting is that you consider placing the contract amendment relating to the energy efficiency conservation block grant contract on the April 24th consent agenda.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Ian.
I so move.
Second.
Oh, wait, I need to ask for public comment first.
I beg your pardon.
I had a question.
And Steve had a question. So.
The $100,000, where's that carried on our books? Is that...
It was a direct pass-through to the credit union.
Okay, but as a pass-through, if the program was suspended and the money was not used, does it pass back?
I believe that they continue. It's a revolving program.
But if they stop the program...
Does it come back to
us?
I do not believe so, but I'm not certain.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Well, where
know.
Does it go? I mean, that's the...
Maybe...
Just curious.
Maybe our finance director can help us.
I mean, it sounds like it's a, it's a commitment.
It is indeed a commitment, and we do carry it as a liability. I'd have to check to see exactly where it is, although it's general fund money. And
okay.
My understanding is that it would come back at the end of, I think it's 20 years. It's quite a long period of time before it would come
back. So it's carried as a liability for
yes,
our
it
books.
Is.
Okay. And we have a commitment. If that gets expended, through default, do we need to re-up, or you just say, sorry, no more money, or do we
My
not?
Understanding is that we do not have to backfill if there is a default, but I would have to check that to be 100% sure.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
I believe, just to clarify, Kathy and I have looked at this program previously. Our commitment, the $100,000 that we have passed through, closes out our financial responsibility. So to the extent that there were defaults, we would not backfill, and even if they were to exceed $100,000, we would not backfill.
Okay.
Okay, any public comment on this? Seeing none, Ann, you're...
Thank you. I move that the City Council place this contract amendment relating to the Energy Efficiency Conservation Block Grant on the April 24th, 2013 consent agenda.
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Item 4C, Ordinance Number 2013-02, Business and Occupation Tax Administrative Procedures.
That's me.
That's you. Welcome.
Good evening. This is the second half of an item that we started at the end of last year and brings the City of Bainbridge Island into conformance with the statewide local B&O tax administrative procedures. And we are asking that you consider scheduling this for second reading. Right, the packet says May 8th, but I believe that you're trying to set that time aside for the SMP, so you may want to consider looking at the 22nd of May.
Steve. Just want to verify that the B&O tax doesn't change for Bainbridge Island and no new people are going to be subject to the B&O tax. Is that correct?
Both of those are true, yes.
Thank you.
Any other council comments? Any public comments? I would entertain a motion to move this to the 22nd.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. Okay, item D has been pulled. Item E, the Madison Avenue Water Main Construction Award, Linden Land Development and Excavation, discussion leaders, Public Works. Welcome, Lance.
Thank you. Good evening, Council. There are a couple PowerPoint slides to just help the conversation along, so I see Christine's getting them loaded. So bear with us just one moment. Well, Council, for introductory comments, the action item that we're looking for from you tonight is to consider approving the award of the contract to Leiden Construction and then moving that forward to consent agenda next Wednesday night. But before we get there, I think it's in brief project overview is in order. And the Madison Avenue Water Main Replacement Project, briefly, it's a project that's nearly 1,300 feet in length. and it starts at the northern end of Madison Avenue near the high school, but you can't see it real clearly on your screen. Maybe if you turn and on the screen, you can see, but by the middle of the library parking lot is where the connection would be made for this water main to an existing 12-inch water main, and then the project is replacing a 6-inch asbestos concrete water main that is, we estimate, between 50 and 60 years old. The southern terminus of the water main is just south of Wallace, past the dance studio in this location. Right there. So the existing 6-inch AC main will be left and abandoned in place, and the new 12-inch ductile iron main installed. One of the benefits of this particular project is that it removes a bottleneck in the sense that the size of the water main on either side of this 6-inch is 12-inch, and from the north and from the reservoir, actually from the well sites to the reservoirs to this location, that is all 12-inch distribution main or transmission main. And then south of the 6-inch, it's 12-inch down to Winslow Way, and Winslow Way from the intersection of Madison all the way over to Winslow Way East near Ferncliff. So that provides a pretty good consistent size trunk for our water main and the downtown core. Another benefit is that it enhances water circulation and flow through the corridor, and equally important is that it prepares us for work that we have scheduled next year with the $434,000 grant, transportation grant, for the Madison overlay project. And very briefly, a description of the proposed use of the project funds and then the overall project budget. The project was funded in part from the annual water preservation program funds from 2012, budget year 12, of $109,000. We are also using 2013 annual water preservation funds of $89,000 out of the available pool that was $139,000. As you may recall, the other use of that $139,000 or $50,000 you recently approved for the Fletcher Bay Wellhouse refurbishment improvements. And then we're recommending to take care of the shortfall in the funding that we have available for the project of $40,000. $30,000 of that is articulated in the note below, but $30,000 of that is intended to take care of the initial shortfall in funding to be able to award the construction contract. An additional $10,000 is being requested to function as a management reserve just to deal with any unforeseen or unanticipated costs that would occur during construction. And roughly stated, that 10% represents about 4.5% of the overall project budget. That's a very modest management reserve for capital projects. Well, by way of introductory comments, I will stop here, and if you have any questions.
I have two questions, Lance. One is a comment. The information before us says that the expenditure $248,000 is budgeted, and I think you just said it's partially budgeted, partially not budgeted. And so on the little form that we have, I think you probably ought to not just say it's already budgeted. Okay. The other question I have is, when I looked at the bids, there were two bids that were, you know, at $227,229, mm-hmm. three bids at $290,000. It's almost like they were bidding on two different projects. Is there, when you analyze that, was there a reason that they were, that's such a large disparity? And it wasn't just one, it was three, right, on, 25% higher or 30% higher.
I can answer in general, but without checking with the individual contractors, why their bids are significantly higher than the other bandwidth and the range that we received, I don't know for sure, specifically. In general, though, what we found throughout bidding on other projects, when we receive bids like this, it can be that the project or the contractors already have other work lined up. And so if they put in a bid, it sometimes is, we're happy to get this, and we'll make it work, but we're going to pay a premium, and if we get it, great, we're happy. If not, then no harm, no foul. But generally speaking, we're very pleased with the bandwidth. You do have some anomalies like that that occur from time to time.
And we've used this company before?
Yes, we have.
Debbie?
Can you explain, you stated that we're increasing to a 12-inch, removing a 6-inch, and what is the in connection? Are we going to a 12-inch?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are.
Meaning that we will be connecting at the other end. How did we get a bottleneck? I'm just curious how that occurred.
I can't go back the entire history of the development mm-hmm. of the water system, but when the city of Winslow developed some of the earlier lines that were put in Madison, this is representative of that earlier construction era, and as certain developments have occurred, the mains have been upgraded for different reasons. But this has been one of those bottlenecks that's remained for a long time. And given that we have road work that's slated to occur next year, along with the other benefits, this is a very good time to do this project. So if we have a water main failure in a year or two, that we don't have to go dig up that new asphalt.
Okay. Sarah?
Lance, when I look at this picture, along this route, it looks like there's some properties that are, underdeveloped. If those were to redevelop with the 6-inch main existing, would those properties be required to upgrade the main?
I honestly can't answer that question standing here without knowing the particulars of what a particular developer is proposing. Fire flow becomes a very important calculation, so without knowing what a development may look like, if it was small or would meet existing fire flow, then no, there would not be a requirement to upgrade. If it was a much larger scale development, it's possible that they could be required to upgrade. But again, I can't stand here tonight and answer that without having very specific information before me.
But if somebody wanted to do a full build-out of a parcel of property there, something large, taking advantage of all the FARs or units they're allowed, they would likely have to upgrade the main.
It would require me to speculate on that, and I just can't do that without specifics.
Well, commercial buildings require fire flow.
Maybe I can answer it this way, and this will be helpful. Other developments have been able to develop without adding fire flow, or been able to satisfy fire flow.
Where there's a 6-inch main?
Not necessarily in this area, but in other areas.
But this is where there's a 6-inch main, the rest of the areas are 12-inch.
Not always.
I'm sorry, council member, I don't know that I can answer more specifically, like I've said, without having a very specific set of calculations for the engineering staff to evaluate.
So, council, what I'm, why I'm asking these questions is, I think it's, it's typical for our water system to require developers to pay for improvements that benefit their property and allow them to develop.
Yeah.
Correct. And so I'm concerned that this upgrade is going to allow development to occur that wouldn't otherwise be able to with the 6-inch main, and the city's paying for it. The existing ratepayers are paying for it, I should say, actually.
Exactly. And I would say that the project is identified as doing two things. One is adding additional capacity to serve future populations or employment growth, and then new facilities or improvements to existing facilities. So, I share Sarah's concern about us bearing the cost, and the somebody down the road developing is not going to have to pay the dollars for it.
Council, if I may just offer an observation. It may not address your comments specifically, but I think as looking at economic development as a potential, the Winslow Way water main was upgraded. And there's the potential for additional development than existed when the water main was upsized at that time. And the city funded those improvements.
Sarah, and then Debbie.
And I understand that, and I didn't agree with it, actually. We're asking people on the system to fund developments.
Debbie?
I'm curious. I don't really know in terms of how we work with our reserves, but is there a potential that, to address Sarah's question, that future connections are actually paying for this upgrade? Do we in any way segregate, say, maintenance money versus upgrades? Do we? I please educate me on that. I don't know. We do have a very large capital reserve right now in the water utility, and what is our accounting procedure related to capital expansion versus capital maintenance? Do we in any way segregate those so that future connections are directed towards paying this back or something?
I think I'll answer it to get to your question. Okay. I think this will get to that. If this was an area that was not currently served by water and the city chose to function as a developer, we could establish a latecomer where we could recover some of those costs. I do not believe that that is the case because we already have an existing water service main in the area. And I just want to iterate again, Council, that this is much more of benefit to the existing customer base because it improves the circulation of the flow, the age of the water, and it just helps take care of a deficiency that exists. And it sets us up for the project next year, and not doing it puts that project potentially at risk.
Steve?
That's a good point that you bring up, Lance. And does the area that this upgrade supports is just on the map, or is it broader than this area?
Well, this area serves the whole downtown water system, Madison, Bajun, Bryan. It provides water through this corridor.
And part of my question is I don't remember whether GROW paid to have water, mm-hmm. its water mains increased. The GROW development did it?
I'm not recalling specifically.
The reason I'm asking is I remember there were citizen comments at the time on the vicinity around GROW Avenue, and that water pressure was very low, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm wondering, is this going to facilitate increasing the water pressure in and about GROW Avenue? And is that,
yeah.
If you understand where I'm going with that?
I think the pressure calculation will be something we will learn later. We do not and have not run a hydraulic model for this improvement. It is anticipated, though, with the water system plan update that we have to start in 2014, that we would learn the answer to your question at that point in time.
Sure.
I do think Steve on the CIP, and Morgan probably knows this, that there's some project between Madison and GROW on Wyatt, mm-hmm. That's maybe for 2016 that the city apparently will be paying for.
Ann?
Well, I think at the most simple, we have to look at the fact, I think the questions about future development are relevant, and I would like to find out if there's a way to deal with it as a latecomer's fee. If there isn't, that's
something, but I think that's a relevant question to ask and see if there's any way perhaps the council can decide if that's a direction we would like to go. I'm concerned, and it seems quite obvious to me, that when you have a 12-inch pipe and you have, and then it goes down to a 6-inch pipe that is 60 years old, that is in fact also a clay pipe, that there's a real risk. And you're also, it's not just that at one end it's 12 inches, it's at the other end. So you are putting a lot of pressure on a very old concrete pipe. And I think from a very practical consideration, I absolutely support doing this project. And if it's something that ends up being a plus to future development, and sadly a part of an expense that's borne by the capital budget of the water system, that's what we get for having a patch of pipe in a system that is 60 years old and out of date. And this is the way we bring it into working order for the rest of the system. And I would like to figure out the questions and see if there's a way to do it more equitably so that growth is paying for growth, which I think is a fundamental piece that many of us have expressed a desire to have happen. So that's one question. And since we're talking about putting this forward to the next business meeting, perhaps what we don't do is put it on the consent agenda, but have some additional information. And if it's not available by that time, we deal with this as soon as it is available and we're able to make a considered decision. But I absolutely think that we have to figure out and recognize that we have portions of our system that are out of date and they need to be brought to compliance. And the risk to a brand new road project, to say nothing of what can happen between now and the 2014, is something we really need to address, and I would encourage us to do so.
I would agree with Ann. I mean, I think it's a very positive thing that we're thinking ahead and actually doing the pipe before we pave the road rather than afterwards. But I would like to see have you look into see if there's a way to recapture or to capture some latecomers fees from this. And I would agree that we should probably continue the discussion next week. Briefly, if you could come up with an answer for that question or at least some comments on it. Sarah?
Well, and even if it's not a latecomer fee, if it's just in the connection fee, if there could be a higher connection fee for that area, I don't know. But I'm not suggesting we don't replace it. I just, like you said, I want to explore options to make it more equitable.
Okay. But I guess I want you to hear, I think it's very important that we act on it. I would also, when we've had a chance to comment, ask Deputy City Manager, if you have some observations or knowledge about this in addition to what the Public Works Director has had to say.
Could you provide information in terms of time frame for this project and how it dovetails with the preservation work that we have planned?
Specifically,
I'm sorry, I didn't see that in our notes, if there were any time frame for when it would potentially start. And
this project could actually start in May of this year.
Right,
so the preservation project would be a 14 project.
Yeah, it's in
my apologies. I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Yep.
Morgan?
I would just want to ask, and Lance, I may be off track here, but is this the project for which we have also want to keep in mind the June deadline for encumbering the funds for the 2014 work?
For the 2014 work for transportation project, but not the water fund for the project in 13.
But so, to play devil's advocate, were we to have more discussion and this project to slip on schedule, that does not have an impact on the funding for 14? Because I thought at one point we talked about there being a need to keep this at the front end of our work season this year so that that question didn't pop up.
I would have to look into that a little bit further. For 13, probably not. The difficulty, of course, is scheduling and fitting in staff time. We have a pretty aggressive work plan this year, and having to fit everything together is very difficult. That'll even be more complicated next year as well.
Okay. Steve? Well, I think that my sense is that the council wants to proceed with this. We need to replace the water main, but we also need to establish a policy in terms of growth plays for growth, and so I think we should task the city manager to go look at that policy and make sure that that policy is can be retroactive to the this particular project, so that we can get on with this project and we'll figure out.
No, I think that makes sense. It looks as though he has a comment.
Okay, I certainly understand the direction related to cost recovery and look at if there are different mechanisms.
Right.
Is there anything else that we can research to be helpful for the conversation next week?
Debbie?
So this is a road cut, correctly? Is that
yes,
the road
it
cut?
Is.
And any sidewalk removal or anything like that as well?
This is a road cut.
Okay. Thank you.
Great.
Otherwise, so do you have a good sense of what additional information we're interested in? Okay. Morgan?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to clarify just in the event of getting a quick turnaround for next week. I think there's probably, if I understand the questions that were raised tonight, there's a larger conversation that you'd like to have about what's legally and options on a policy front.
Yeah, just a short, you know, one that the city manager comes back and says, hey, we've taken a quick look at this, and yeah, there are some things, and this is kind of when we'll be able to address it. It does not need to be fully addressed next week, but acknowledge that that's going to be evaluated.
Okay, and I think we can make a commitment to evaluate it. I'm thinking in terms of the city manager's schedule, that it might be more useful to use that time once he's had the opportunity to prepare some actual materials if that's not an ingredient in your decision on the project.
Sounds so. I think that's an important question. Well, and I think we could be providing some guidance. Is this something that's a deal breaker for any of us? That this is an imperative we have that information and be able to address it before we're willing to consider this issue.
I think the only to me
go ahead.
Okay. I think the only issue is, can it be from a legal standpoint, assuming that if there is some way that growth pays for growth, if whatever that policy is can be retroactive to this day. We're going to have to replace the mains. That's my sense.
I am firmly.
I think the sense is that how do we get growth to pay for growth? If we had an existing policy,
impact fees is one.
But if we had an existing policy that would apply to this, it'd be fine. So the question I really have is, if we can get a growth pays for growth policy, can it be retroactive to this project? And that's a different question.
It's a different question, and I think.
And if it can be retroactive to this project, then you can proceed with the project.
And if it cannot, you'll think about it at that point. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's the issue to me.
Okay. Does somebody want to make a modified motion here?
I have other questions.
Oh, go ahead, Debbie.
Mr. Newkirk, in looking at the estimated budgets, there is a 20% difference from what we originally seemed like we had set aside. And help me understand, when we build our budgets, are we estimating prior to building the budget so that we have kind of a truer target? I get concerned when we increase things 20%. So help me understand your process so we can get better targets, I would suggest.
Right. And if you could help me, when you're referring to the 20%, which number are you referring to, please?
In terms of our set-aside numbers, when we build our CIP, obviously you had some projects in mind. We wouldn't just put a random number in place, I don't think. I think you probably brought forward targeted projects for the year, and it seemed that our targeted project number was off by about 20%. I could see that with the increase. I understand that piping increased this year because of what's going on in the Midwest or something. There was probably a 10% increase. So just help me, if you wouldn't mind educating me on how you develop your project estimations and making sure that we have good numbers and we're not having this bit of fluctuation.
I think this will get to, and I'll be very brief and quick, but for this particular project, it evolved out of an annual water preservation fund. That fund is used to develop projects, and so that can include initial design, right-of-way, permitting, as well as construction. So the number that was in the capital improvement plan and the budget for 13 was acknowledging that this was a project under development. It was not identifying an overall project budget, but that was a funding source that would be added to create the project budget. And in this particular instance, the design work didn't actually occur till January of this year. So numbers are very preliminary, very estimate through that time frame. I hope that gets to the question you're asking.
Steve?
Lance, not to put words in your mouth, he's basically saying that we have an annual budget and it's $189,000 or thereabouts for doing water projects, and we look at, on an annual basis, I've got that money and I try to make the projects fit. If they don't fit, you come back and ask for more money.
That's certainly a summary and one way to look at
that. That's really what happened.
And we had money left from 2012.
Yeah, which is why I said don't check the little box that says budgeted. You're coming back and asking for more money.
Okay.
Thank you.
So the amount of money in the annual preservation program is not based on specific project estimates.
I think Morgan can answer that.
Is that
Morgan?
I'll jump in since I have grabbed a hold of the CFP for what it's worth. In that case, the annual programming, and in the utility line items, you'll see these annual programming line items, is a flat number that gets escalated year over year. And so, to say it a different way, it's not driven by a ground-up accumulation of projects. If you look back to 2012, one of the things that money was used for was to fund the design work for this project, which didn't happen then until January. That design work then gives us a much better number to anticipate what the actual project cost will be.
I think that's where the confusion is, mm-hmm. is that people see this number and they assume it's based on project estimates, and it's not.
Right.
And so they see that and think, well, now the estimate's much higher than what was budgeted for, but that mm-hmm. that wasn't really what occurred.
It's like a percentage of asset value for replacement.
And I think that's a format issue that this is very helpful for, because I think one of the things we were trying to do was call out projects we knew we would be working on so that annual number wasn't just, you know, a blanket. But what it does then is it also leaves you open to the perception that amount of dollars will cover those named projects. And so I think we can work on that and try and do a little bit better job on both ends.
And I think the other piece that I would offer is that in this case, our agenda bill includes the engineer's estimate. And so I think that then puts a point to what was done once the project was designed and there was an engineering estimate created. And these bids are within that range, or at least those that the one that we're considering awarding.
Okay. Steve?
I move the City Council forward the contract with Linden Land Development Excavation for the Madison Avenue Water Project in the amount of $227,724.14 and authorize a budget amendment of $40,000 from the Water Fund to the next business meeting. And I'm deleting the word consent agenda. We'll add the... I'll just leave it right there.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Lance.
And you picked up the you picked up the thing about the city manager on looking at if we can put something together, whether it can be retroactive.
Absolutely, and we'll bring you what we know next week.
That's great. That's perfect. Thank you.
Thanks, Lance. Okay, item F.
Thank you.
License agreement with Kitsap Public Utility District, Meg's Farm, water well level monitoring. Public Works.
I'm back.
Okay, you're still here.
This particular item that's in your agenda packet tonight represents the culmination of several months of effort between the PUD and city staff. So the license agreement before you tonight is authorization to allow the KPUD to install a submersible pressure transducer to conduct continuous groundwater monitoring at the former Meg's Farm well property. This is a project that the city with the continuous flow monitoring has not been able to do. There was a period of time with the USGS study that was jointly funded between the city and USGS where continuous flow monitoring was provided. Unfortunately, that equipment was taken back by the USGS and that program stopped in 2009. City, as a stopgap measure, continued manual well soundings of the Meg's Farm well, but because of the age of the well and the equipment, that was something that was stopped in September of 2011. So with this agreement, there's mutual interest between the city and the KPUD to monitor the groundwater of the Fletcher Bay Aquifer, and this license agreement will allow the KPUD to install the equipment and then provide that service, of which we will benefit from getting the data that the KPUD generates.
Steve.
I move the City Council forward a license agreement with KPUD for the Meg's Farm well water level monitoring service for the next council meeting. Consent agenda.
Second.
Discussion?
I know we have one audience member left. Do you want to double check for any community conversation
I do have
or
one
discussion
question,
before we
do you want
vote
to make a public
move?
Comment?
No.
Okay, thank you.
I do have one question.
Yes.
Do they need a permit to do this? We're giving a license to do it. Do they have to go to the planning department and get a permit?
No.
Okay, thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item G, resolution, excuse me.
Item G, go ahead.
Okay, item G.
I want to, before you even talk to Lance, why with the, both G and H, with the dollar level under the authorization of the city manager, why are these on our radar at all?
Well, for G, a sole source procurement contract requires council approval. And then H, you council will be asked to make a policy call.
Okay, thank you. So, item G, resolution 2013-08, Linwood Center's stormwater outfall project, sole source purchase and checkmate inline check valve purchase, AB 13-048. Once again,
okay.
Mr. Newkirk.
David. I'll jump right in on this one as I. Yes.
Before Lance starts, I saw Bruce back there, and I just now remember I should probably disclose that part of this project, I believe, takes place on property I have a financial interest in.
Okay. Right. Thank you, Sarah.
So you're recusing yourself?
I will.
From the consideration? Okay.
Okay. Please proceed.
Okay. Lance. Well, as you'd already heard, the agenda item before you tonight is to consider approval of a sole source procurement contract or agreement. And what the sole source will do is it helps buy equipment today that will help build a larger stormwater outfall improvement project in the Linwood Center area. The particular design for this project and these improvements call for a tidal valve. I'll explain that in a minute what that is. Again, the valve procurement is a sole source, and that's the reason we're here to seek your authority to enter that sole source agreement. And then we have identified a recommended valve type. So what is a tidal valve? A tidal valve is a device that prevents the backflow of water from tidal-influenced areas into a pipe. And by preventing that action from occurring, we can improve the water quality, and through the reduction of tidally influenced sediment and contaminants that can find their way into the pipe. The particular pipe in question has a history of a large accumulation of beach sediment. And additionally, because of that, we also get the benefit with this particular valve of reducing the maintenance frequency and cost, and the odor, which is very important to the neighbors in the area, of the decaying organic matter. So the project status is the design is 90% complete. It's in permitting review. We're waiting for the shoreline permit. We're going through that process. And then once we come out of that, we'll apply for an HPA permit. And from there, we'll go to bid, award, and construct of the project. Ooh, I jumped ahead. This really got short. Excuse me, 1 second. I'm going to have to do this a little improvised here, so bear with me. One of the things that we evaluated, and I want to make sure that I acknowledge a staff member who's present here tonight, Bruce Oilo is sitting at this staff table, and he's the project manager on this. And through Bruce's initial evaluation of the project, we identified this type of tidal valve. Well, if you look at the size of this valve, it's 77 inches tall. By way of comparison, I'm 73 inches tall. That is a big valve. It only comes in one color, just like the old Model Ts, black. It also required significant anchoring and a new concrete footing, which we estimated at the time of about $12,000. The installation is extensive because of the concrete work and some of the beach work, and it has a total cost of approximately $36,000. The valve that we are recommending tonight is called the slip line, and you can see by the size, it's significantly smaller, and it has the added benefit of no anchoring. And the reason for that is because it actually slips in on the end of the pipe. The picture to the very bottom of your screen to the right shows a crew installing this type of valve in a piping outfall. You also have the benefit with this type of application of avoiding that $12,000 cost of the anchoring. The installation time goes down, the work on the beach goes down, and also significantly is it's $14,000 cheaper in procurement cost than the other type of valve. So, I'll stop there and just entertain any questions if you have them.
So in summary, there's only one source for this valve that's less expensive and easier to install?
That's a very succinct summary.
Okay.
It has one other benefit, which was impressive to me. It's maintenance-free.
Okay. Any other council comments? Any public comments? Okay. Ann?
Happy to make the motion that the City Council forward the Linwood Center Stormwater Outfall Sole Source Purchase Resolution Number 2013-18 and the purchase of the Checkmate, which is a copyrighted name, patent, an inline check valve, in the estimated amount of $24,531. That price does not include freight costs, and have this brought forward at the next City Council business meeting on the consent agenda.
Second.
Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
With one recusal.
With one recusal,
we need to know.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. Item H, Dripping Water Creek Drainage Improvements Professional Services Agreement.
I love this.
Amendment number 2, MAP Limited, AB 13-049.
At this juncture, I'll give council a break and turn this over to Chris Hammer to speak to.
I'm good with this.
All right.
Okay. So I'm here to talk a little bit about the Dripping Water Fish Passage Culvert Project, our progress, and seek your guidance on a decision point. So I'll go ahead and start without the slides, but the first question, I'm going to give a little bit of a project overview.
Mm-hmm.
First, why are we doing this project at all? We have a existing culvert that's failed. It has a partially crushed top along some of it. It's cracked in several locations, and there's water that actually moves from the soil into the culvert and from the culvert into the soil. So it's just in the fact that it's failed. We want to we're looking to replace the culvert. Also, the water we have a capacity issue in that during storm events the water actually overtops the roadway. So a couple of good reasons why. What we're doing is the existing culvert's a 24-inch diameter concrete culvert. And we're replacing it with an aluminum box culvert that actually bridges the creek. It's the width of the creek. What's the decision point? We're presenting two alternatives. One is to include non-motorized improvements with the project, and the other is to not include those improvements. So why would we include the non-motorized improvements? The comprehensive plan, the map for the non-motorized, calls for Sunrise Drive to have shoulders on both sides throughout the roadway. And if we were to do that work today, it would be less costly than if we were to try to make the culvert longer and widen the roadway in the future. And until we get to the point, it's probably going to be a number of years before we actually would do the Core 40 project that would implement the shoulders there. But in the meantime, we would have a kind of a refuge area where people could take a break and a place for people to be off the roadway. Why consider not including the non-motorized improvements? So, on one hand, if we provide the shoulder improvements, we will then have to do some additional work to relocate a portion of the creek. There'd be some other impacts to the vegetation and trees. We'd anticipate taking down 5 or 6 additional trees. So there'd be some additional impacts. If we have the tighter, if we stick within the existing embankment and have, you know, the tighter culvert, of course, then it's not as far to go for the fish passage. So potentially it would be better environmentally from that standpoint. Also, of course, if we're going to make the culvert or the road wider and extend the culvert, it's going to take more space, and our existing right-of-way is increasing the width of the roadway would actually move the embankments and the structure outside of the right-of-way, so that would create an additional hurdle for us. You're all familiar with right-of-way acquisition and, mm-hmm. and the challenges creates for us. Whereas if we keep it tighter to the existing embankments, you know, it's all the work would be, the structure work, the embankment work would be within the existing footprint. So, doing additional work, there'll be increased costs, and it would take some additional time. We would not be able to complete that project this year. With the additional need for the right-of-way acquisition.
Okay. Thank you.
So here's kind of the bottom line where we kind of project the costs and the schedule. If we include the shoulder improvements, we think it'd be between the design and the construction about $80,000 more. And of course, the right-of-way thing is kind of a hard thing for us to estimate at this point. But potentially, with keeping it within the existing footprint, we may be able to work with the fronting property owners to donate the temporary easements that we would need to complete the project, where otherwise we would get into more extensive work and getting assessment of value of the property and those kinds of things. So at this point, I just request council direction on alternative one. We would move ahead on the course we're on, pursue the shoulder improvements, and have you authorize the amendment to the professional service agreement that's before you tonight, or pursue a more basic project.
Okay.
And before I take your questions, I've got just another. This is kind of a, in my mind, this is kind of a cost-benefit weighs heavily into this decision-making. And so I'd like to provide you some kind of benchmarks for that. Our entire stormwater budget every year, the annual program, is usually around $230,000 last year. This year we took a portion of the money and put it towards the dripping water, or the Linwood Center project that you just saw the tide valve for. So we have $188,000. A project of $180,000, that level of funding is a pretty big project for our program. On the other side, for non-motorized improvements, we are doing the spot improvement projects this year. And for around $40,000, we're able to overrun the Sportsman's Club, widen several hundred feet of shoulders on both sides of the road. Mm-hmm. As compared to here, it would be roughly 50 feet. So hopefully that gives you some sense of the benefits.
Okay, Debbie?
I want to compliment Lance Newkirk and Chris Hammer for actually asking this question and contacting the chair of the non-motorized committee and getting his feedback as well. And certainly this is very hard for me to say, because I've always been Miss Non-Motorized Person, but I do think that there are other ways to spend this money, and this right now is not the best for non-motorized, and I would say that what we've been doing on Madison, North Madison, we've been incrementally improving that, and right now I hear from a lot of the commuter bicyclists that Sunrise isn't actually their route that they take. They take Madison all the way around, and even folks that are heading up to the Fabian-Bridge Park, same thing. They're using the safer route, which is Madison.
Yeah.
But again, I would like to compliment you. It's very important the way that you are gathering that information and providing us the option. Thank you.
So I have a question of Council Member Lester. So if we follow your lead and you are indeed Miss Non-Motorized Transportation, would the course of action to be to reject this proposed amendment, and that would put us into option number one?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Number two. I think we're looking.
Yeah.
Why don't we flip back? So, because you had that very clearly on one of the. Can we go back to that one so we can look at it? There you go. Then I think that lays out the issue for us. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Any other comments or motions?
I would absolutely support what Debbie has said, and my opinion is informed by the comment that we received from the chair of the Non-Motorized Transportation Committee. He was very clear. He had not talked to the committee as a whole, but from his knowledge of that committee's priorities and what he knows about this and bicycle riding and the non-motorized program, he also would endorse alternative two, and I will follow his advice in this particular case, and it mm-hmm. seems to coincide with what Debbie knows, and I appreciate that.
Okay. So.
Comments from the public?
No public comments. Okay, thank you. Well, you had a very good one, so it's anyway, Debbie.
I move to accept alternative 2.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. We're going to take a 5-minute break and re-adjourn at or reconvene at 10 of.
Okay.
Did you know this was that? And that's really the here's the exactly here's the packet. I'm sorry, it's there. Project engineer. Yeah, it is. There it is. Okay, I'm calling. I apologize. It was on the last page. Okay, but it was the. It was this that was the. This was the. That was the cover sheet.
Yeah, it's because it's about.
Yeah, big. Got it.
The meat of the matter was.
Right.
It seems like the right choice to step away from the continent and point to all.
Oh, no, no. Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. Our good friend.
Reconvene the meeting. We're on council discussion. Item 5A, TransPol funding, key milestones. Mr. Bunkowski is the discussion leader.
What this discussion is about is the we had, I think, at the last council meeting a discussion associated with grants for a small grant to supplement the cost associated with some school flashing lights. And as a result of that, I got to thinking that, you know, I think that as a council, that it might be appropriate for us to set a goal on an annual basis of what kind of grants we're looking for in terms of a dollar amount, and having a budget set aside for the match. For example, you know, at TransPol, the reason it falls out of TransPol is that many of the grants through TransPol that we apply for require matching grants. And, you know, things have popped up a number of times that here's a grant opportunity here or a grant opportunity there. And I think that as a policy, you know, we ought to think about, you know, if you take the total group of transportation, whether it's motorized or non-motorized, and say that on an annual basis, we'd like to target $1 million worth of grants. And to achieve $1 million worth of grants, we have to have $200,000 worth of match. And in the budget, set aside the $200,000 worth of grant and challenge the city staff to find all those grant opportunities that might add up to $1 million. Because right now, we don't. Every time we get a grant, for the most part, it's do you want to spend the money in order to achieve the grant for this end? So instead of saying we have a goal of trying to achieve so many thousands of dollars in grant, and to do that, you know, you've got to spend some money to do that, not besides the match, maybe you have the staff time, but to set that money aside as part of the budgetary process. So that's the discussion that I really wanted to have in terms of, was that something that the council thought that it would be beneficial, or we like the way it currently works?
Go ahead. I do have some, but
certainly having missed opportunities because we hadn't budgeted. I think that it is wise to do that kind of set aside or budget a target. And certainly, if we are not successful, then those funds could be potentially reprogrammed for the rest of the year. Maybe increase our road improvement or our spot non-motorized. So it would be a benefit both ways. You know, I certainly, a couple of years ago, or last year, when we had the opportunity to apply for designing a Sound to Olympics trail, and we didn't have programmed the $30,000 match that was needed. We were set, and we were even recommended by the organizations that were funding it to apply. And I understand how the council is being very on target and with our budget, and you know, we didn't have it set aside, and so now I would support this idea of giving a target chunk of money that when these opportunities come up that we can move, and certainly checking with the city manager and the staff and making sure we have the ability to support those grants as well in terms of staffing time. So I appreciate Mayor Bunkowski bringing this forward for discussion.
Ann?
Thank you. I guess I'm wanting very much to check in with our deputy city manager and also to understand. I guess I have two thoughts. One,
I thought this was exactly why we were working so hard to have our CIP and the whole thing, and knowing what the work plan was, so that, in fact, it was built in that we were going to be doing that. And I was under the impression that, for example, in the non-motorized, one of the reasons we set the goal and said $700,000 additional every year, you know, to bring it up to $1 million, was doing exactly what you're asking for. Now, I may be missing the point, so that's one. And then I have another question which has to do with the point of our spot budgets, because our spot projects, because that was, in fact, I thought, the idea that if something came up unexpectedly that wasn't on our work plan, that we weren't seeking matching. I mean, we didn't know we were going to do it, and so we had that pool of funds available. So those are two things that it seemed to me we were sort of working in this direction already.
Well, I think I'm the one that pushed to have the
750, because it was such
a
charming
on a constant
note.
Basis. But there wasn't any money put in to achieve the match. If you think about it, we were going to say we were going to get $700,000 worth of grants. I mean, that's what's in the CIP.
There's $250,000, right?
I don't think so.
I thought it was at $1 million. Anyway,
because,
okay.
For example, I mean, last week we turned down the school flashing, because it would have been $20,000 or $11,000 out of the contingency fund. It wasn't out of a spot grant fund. It was out of the contingency fund. So there is not a set aside right now for achieving grants.
Okay. I think that may serve as an example to you. I think it's really important for you to know that's not why I turned that down last week. I mean, it's really important on a public record. That project was going to cost us an unbudgeted $80,000, and that was the bigger problem. So that was my understanding. Anyway, so let's talk about this one. And that can be clarified.
And that's fine. The point is that $80,000 was unbudgeted.
That's correct.
I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
My point was that it was a grant, and if we had there was a grant opportunity of $7,500, but it required us to put in a lot of money. Okay. So instead of saying, this is an $80,000 out of that spot fund, do you want to spend it for this grant, or do you want to keep it for another opportunity? If that had been there, that would have been fine. That's exactly what I'm talking about. But if the idea is, mm-hmm. the money needs to be set aside, so it's not out of the contingent.
Okay, I'd like to hear both as far as how that fits in with the planning and the work plan, but also the mechanics of setting aside a fairly substantial amount of money. I just don't know what we do, how that all works. Okay, so those are my questions.
Any other comments? Debbie?
I would like to hear from the Public Works Director to get his advice or guidance.
Evening again, Council. As I've been listening to the conversation, and I understand the idea is to have what I understand or characterize as opportunity set aside to pursue grants when they come available. Because typically the grants that we are eligible for and pursue are in the queue, in the hopper, and in the plan. The set aside or opportunity match can be thought of as looking ahead a year or two down the road. And then you get you have the match, you can pursue the grant, and you're actually pursuing a project that is 1-2 years down the road or more.
Okay.
So it doesn't necessarily disrupt a current year work plan or even potentially the following year, because it's further looking ahead.
Thank you. That's a helpful perspective. And I think thinking about it is an opportunity. So
Debbie?
We received our little disc regarding the budget, and my understanding is that we should have a budget update, and possibly we may have surpluses at this point. I'm not sure. So that could be something in conversation. We might make budget adjustments for this year. It could be a discussion.
Council, I'd like to offer just one final thought and allow you to deliberate. It's not uncommon that other public works agencies do something similar, to have an available source of funds to pursue grant opportunities. And so it really becomes a policy question, and I think it becomes a strategic planning exercise as the federal grants in particular are becoming more competitive and the opportunities are becoming scarcer. So when they are available, we as a community need to be positioned and leveraged very well to pursue those opportunities.
Debbie?
Clarification. We had asked for information at the last council meeting. This confusing safe routes to school, which came from a different agency than normally, so it wasn't really on our radar screen. This came from the Washington State Transportation Committee, not our typical two-year cycle granting. And if I remember correctly, we were asking for information, and we could have chose to do one school. We did not have to choose to do all four schools. So it could have been anywhere from 20,000 to 80,000. So there was a range, and council opted not to go forward because we hadn't budgeted or didn't have that money set aside. So, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, did you reach your goal of getting it discussed?
I got it discussed. I don't know if that's if there's general support or not for that.
I certainly see it as something worth doing.
Okay.
I think I do too. I mean, I think conceptually it makes a whole lot of sense. I don't know that. I think I would like to know more about how it works, but I would very much like it to be explored.
We don't have a policy to do that right now, and as we get into the June-July time frame when the city manager is going to start putting together future plans, we need to have – I just wanted to start getting that into that discussion.
Great. Thank you for doing that.
Okay. So we'll move on to the next item, 5B, Pacific Gateway Terminal Coal Proposal. Mayor Munkowski.
Okay. I got an email from Rob Gala out of the CL Mayor's office, and there is a going to be a meeting next Monday to in support of not having coal trains go through
support of the opposition.
Yeah. And I'm bringing it to council because I know that the council in the past has supported this resolution. I personally cannot because I have a different view. I think that we ought to regulate the amount of coal that comes off of trains and then use that as just like you regulate the amount of smog coming out of cars. And either the trains can make that happen or they can't. If they can't, they don't come through. If they can, then come through. So to me, just arbitrarily saying we're not going to have coal trains is not the preferred approach. I'd like to say that we ought to have a strict regulation in terms of the amount of coal they can produce in some fashion. So I understand the community wants to support this, but I would not be the right one to go to this meeting. So if the council wants to participate in this, then another council member needs to participate in this meeting. That's what the request was.
Actually, the request has three things
mm-hmm.
involved in it. And my overarching thing is, as a council, collectively, we voted
to do this. And I understand
I'm fine that saying that we support that. And I don't have any problem.
And I appreciate what you're saying about your personal, but I think it's just,
yeah,
it's one of those tricky deals, and I appreciate your candor about it. There are three things being asked for, and I don't know. We do not, let me just tell you what the three things are, is attendance at the press event, and the next is a quote that could be included in that material that's to go out with the press event. They also have an op-ed piece, which we do not have a copy of, or at least I don't. I don't see the op-ed piece here that they want the City of Bainbridge Island to sign on to. And there was also a request for funds. So actually there are four things. And we have, as a council, said on behalf of our city that we oppose this particular gateway terminal in Bellingham. So I think we need to sort of consider how we deal with this. And I think your point about if we want to go, someone else needs to do it, that's totally appropriate and fine.
I mean, and again,
but we just don't.
As mayor,
I
have signed a number
of
things that I personally, you know, that the council says this is what, and that's fine. And I can certainly do that again here. And I think we should just resurrect that and be supportive of that, because I think that's the will of the council. And I can certainly support that, but I can't support.
No, I think that's fine.
Going
that
so, that's why I bring this up. And the issue, I'll see if I can find an op-ed piece. I don't remember that. I will find it, because what I did is I took the email that I got from Robin. This was about a week or so ago. And I forwarded the whole thing to Roz for including in the discussion. So I'll find out if there's something that got left. Okay.
So
how do we want to proceed?
Debbie?
Since Councilmember Hightopoulos brought this issue forward, and since she's not here, I will volunteer. No. I think she should be given the opportunity to attend.
Okay.
She initiated our resolution, and so I would certainly suggest we ask someone ask her.
Okay, I can ask.
And I think she's actually mentioned before that
she's attended other rallies in support of this particular thing. And I think that because of the vote we took, I would ask that we pull a quote from our resolution, and that can be at. And I would suggest that we ask Kirsten to help choose that quote, but it go as a City of Bainbridge Island quote. The same thing, the op-ed piece, frankly, I'm uncomfortable with that without seeing it. And I think that's just an issue there. And I have no interest in spending city money to support this, because I think, for a variety of reasons. That's my personal opinion, although I feel quite strongly that the city, we did vote to support it, and I would go with that because we did vote that way.
All right, I will give Kirsten a call and ask her about attending. If we can get, Christine, get somebody to pull that resolution and email it to me. I'll go find it. I'll go find an appropriate quote, and I will follow up with
by
Rob.
Noon tomorrow, it looks like.
That's not
okay.
Okay.
So item 5C was added to the agenda. It's a discussion of the SMP format, also led by Mayor Bonkowski. So
the I had a discussion with the city manager last week about the format for the public hearing on SMP. And having gone through a number of some study sessions as well as council meetings on the SMP, I'm guessing that the public hearing will be a significant event. I asked for his guidance in terms of the different kinds of ways to conduct a public hearing. And we basically kicked around a concept that we would have a public hearing and What I'm proposing is we have a public hearing starting at 5, ending at no later than 10, and that we allow people 5 minutes to talk, and without having, with no seated time. And if they have more than 5 minutes worth of discussion, they can talk after everyone else has had an opportunity to talk. We also talked about a way so that we can get a good record of who's speaking, and some of the names written down are not all that clear. And so what we're planning on doing is having numbers, so when you come in, if you want to talk, you go to a clerk or a member of the staff, and they get a number and a name. So we'll have a, and so then when you call up, you know, numbers 1 through 5, please come up, you know, 6 through 10, so that we can facilitate. And that way you also then know this is all the numbers you've got. So if you're number 3 and you want to go and spend another 5 minutes on the podium, then they get in the back of the line and they're now 37 or whatever the number is. And that's kind of the process that we came up with. The feedback that I got after the last council meeting from a wide variety of our community was that they all felt that they were being heard by council, and I thought that was a good thing. So that's what I am proposing. I'd like some feedback if that works.
Debbie?
The speaking and then getting back in line, I'm not that comfortable with. Our public hearings have always been a set time of 5 minutes allotted. Our public comment is allotted at 3, and we don't say get in back of the line and get another public comment in. So I'm
that's
not sure.
Quite, can I? Go ahead. It's not quite sure when we went and did the public hearing for the land use. We did it on a paragraph by paragraph basis, and the same persons popped up time and time and time again as we went through paragraph by paragraph.
If I remember correctly, those were study sessions.
Right, that's
those weren't
than
public,
a public
hearings.
Hearing.
I thought the last public hearing was that. Okay.
And I'll throw a comment, and I'd be real surprised if people waited around for an hour to get back in line again. I just really don't see it happening, except on rare occasions.
Particularly if it's a 5-hour hearing.
Yep.
I mean, they would be waiting 4 hours potentially. I mean, that is what we're saying. I think we should just make it real clear to ourselves that we're proposing a 5-hour public hearing. And I guess I think that's heroic, to put it quite mildly, and I don't even know how to put it more delicately. And I worry about our ability to be responsive and thoughtful about that amount of time at one block. We have had such a lot of community input over the course of these last 3 years that I think, I mean, I appreciate it. I don't want to curtail the public hearing, but I also would like to suggest that we acknowledge it has to happen and be closed and ended in terms of that public hearing, and that we're ahead of time committed to figuring out how to make it possible for all who wish to speak to speak. And if that turns out for some reason to be more than 60 people, which is the time basically that you're allotting or, you know, proposing to allot, is that 60 people. And if we end up with more people than that, I would like to say right now, not having any idea, that we curtail the amount of time as opposed to extending it beyond 5 hours because we have more than 60 people, that we adjust to make the comments and the people who wish to speak fit in that 5-hour time block.
Well, I mean, I guess we're just going to have to excuse ourselves to the public when we need to do deep knee bends or walk to the restroom. I mean, that's an amazing amount of time, and I think it's absolutely something that matters terrifically to our community, and we've committed quite a bit of energy to it, and I would like to continue that. So I think breaks are important for everybody's sake, but I don't know how that works in terms of honoring the possibility that we could have 60 people mm-hmm. wanting to speak or more.
What about the idea of allocating the five-hour block and then having the speaking time be set based on the number of people?
Oh, I think...
Yeah, I think that's what you're suggesting.
But I mean, but I don't want to do it and say, gosh, we only have this
three
many.
People,
let's
you
go
got an
ahead.
Hour of peace.
I was going to say, and we get to listen to you talk for 15 minutes. I mean, I guess I would suggest 5 minutes maximum.
The upper end, not the lower end.
Right, and that's what, I mean, that's what I was trying to say, David. You may have said it much more clearly. That is what I was intending. However, I do not mean that people would be given, that we would adjust beyond 5 minutes right. maximum per person. We may need to curtail the time if there are more than 60 people, and that was just me doing arithmetic.
I think that makes an immense amount of sense.
So first priority, other than listening to the residents, is one, it's 5 hours long, starts from 5, goes to 10.
Maximum.
Max.
Yeah.
And two, 5-minute comment. Max.
And then adjust as needed.
And adjust as needed. Adjust as needed to fit in the 5 hours.
Downward.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
He's
got 5 minutes.
I got 5 minutes max.
Thank you. Okay. I don't know. I mean, I think we also should acknowledge that we have two people who are unable to be here tonight. And
we have a quorum.
There you go. Okay. And we're not planning to take any action.
No. It'd be too way.
And are we planning to have... Once the public hearing is closed, because it's not a conversing time, it is, in fact, a very specific format, are we anticipating then that we will ask staff to be available and have comments and questions? No. All right. And
that's
I think because I think one of the things...
We'll have written comments and written questions provided.
Okay. Because I think, as I understand it, that Ryan is unable to be here on that evening. So fortunately, it will be taped and so forth, and we can get his input. But we can't anticipate that night
right.
an exchange and information clarifying in any major detail because right. he's not available. And I think we'll check with...
Morgan, you had a comment?
I just wanted to point out exactly as you just said that clarifying what the staff expectations were since Ryan is not available that night. So look, when we look ahead, right now we have the schedule set up to have the public hearing on the 8th and have the ordinance then come back to you on the 22nd, I think. So if you're anticipating another working session in between then, we should think about that in terms of calendar.
And I mean, I can't imagine that there might not be questions or comments that could arise as an outgrowth of 5 hours of comments.
Yeah, so, I think we should allow for that, and then we can always abandon that
right.
time frame if we need to. But
yep.
Does it warrant perhaps moving the vote forward at all?
Oh, the vote.
The scheduled vote?
Mean out.
No. Out.
Perhaps.
Okay.
I mean, since the vote is our vote, mm-hmm. but the only thing we have to firmly schedule is the hearing.
Okay.
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 And
could
so,
I encourage us to think about that and figure it out sooner than later? Because on a very personal level, I have an airplane ticket I have to buy. It's all dependent on that vote.
Why don't we cover that and we hit upcoming agendas?
Thank you. All right.
Okay. I think we've...
Okay, committee reports.
Given some committee reports.
Yeah.
Do you have one?
I do not.
Debbie does.
Okay. In the KRCC, the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council Transpol meeting, I just wanted to let folks know that the Wing Point Way is on the contingency list and is positioned well should federal funding become available. And also, we asked the question if we could submit requests for further preservation funding. I noticed that Bremerton had put in another additional slot of preservation funding, and the executive director said yes, because we have already been approved for preservation federal funding, that we would be eligible. So hopefully our public works director will be bringing that to the TransTAC committee, that information. This Friday, there is a meeting regarding the SR State Route 305 and Suquamish Way intersection project. I believe Councilmember Blair, Mayor Bunkowski, and myself, and I think we've invited the city manager. I'm not sure if he'll be in attendance, but we will be receiving information from WashDOT. They've been studying this intersection and will come forward with suggested design solutions for that intersection.
Okay. Ann, you got a...
Thank you. I have both a regional and a Bainbridge Island committee to just make a quick comment about. I represent Bainbridge, or the mayor, on Kitsap Transit, and I wanted everybody to know that we collectively as a board approved going forward with a phase two part of the research project on the passenger-only ferry. And that the funding for that comes out of the initial grant money that was federal grant money for the passenger-only ferry research, WAKE research project. And this is to hire a consultant to develop a business plan that is not particularly suggesting that it has to be Kitsap Transit operating this, but to, in fact, do and develop to see any feasibility for anyone as part of the research project. So that was approved, and I voted on the affirmative in that. That meeting, we also approved that a letter of about regarding the tenant improvements to the transit building. And so there will be proposals going forward for grant funding on that. And that was something that, again, Kitsap Transit's involved in. Locally, the Road Ends Committee is meeting with staff on May 6th. It's an open public meeting here in City Hall in the middle of the day to discuss the project feasibility report from the staff on the 2013-2014 work plan. And that is something that, as that works through, the council will eventually see and be asked to comment on. But it's being developed, and so they are meeting with staff to receive the staff report on the feasibility.
Okay. Any others? I'm going to be attending the CENCOM planning retreat, which is all day tomorrow, and I'll report back on that next week. So that's the end of the committee reports. So we'll start looking at upcoming agendas, starting with next week's. And I know one thing for certain, we pulled item D off the consent agenda with request that item 9D off the consent agenda, as well as item six. So those two. Item 6 has totally gone off the agenda for next week, and item 9D is moved to the
new business
council discussion, I guess. Well, it's not new business if we've already talked about it, is it?
Right.
I mean, I don't care where it goes as long as it's not on the consent agenda, it's on the agenda, so I'm sure we can figure that out. Mm-hmm. Are there any other changes, additions, or comments on next week's agenda? Debbie?
I received information back from the finance director regarding item 8A. And in looking at the language, consultants, I found that consultants was listed, but I didn't, and it was a quick look, I didn't find internet-based digital services. So if we could just double check, and if it's there, we could certainly pull that off the agenda.
Okay. Will you follow through on that, or?
Yes.
Okay.
We're looking into that, and so that's your direction, we'll follow up. I'm sure Ellen will send you an email just kind of confirming what she's concluded.
Thank you.
And it'll be distributed to the full council?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, does that handle comments relating to next week?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then we're moving into May. Anne, what's the date that we need to be aware of your plane ticket as it relates to the SMP?
It's the vote on the 22nd, and I will be here. So, but if we're going to change it and not be able to do it or do not anticipate being able to do it, I'd like to know it, and then I may not be here. But I don't want us, I mean, we're not designing this around my grandchild's classroom performance so much, as darling as she is, but
well, you can bring a video and share
but I need to be there if I can, but
no, I mean,
I absolutely am committed to attending the vote, and I just, if we're going to suddenly decide we can't do it and it's not wise to do it on the 22nd of May, okay, it would be great to know it. And
all right,
I'll
tell you what, let's
go to Denver.
Let's put the vote on the 12th of June.
And that's right. I mean, there's no.
And have
a discussion
on the
No, we can just go. Well, go ahead.
Why, if it is okay for Anne for the 22nd, why would we be pushing it out? Almost another month.
Because I'm guessing it would appear that, you know, if I look at the schedule,
we will probably have some discussion,
SMP
discussion on the 15th.
Okay. You want to?
I mean, I'm thinking that that's our opportunity
that
to discuss any issues that come up.
We can put discussion on the 15th. SMP discussion.
Thank you.
And a vote on the 22nd.
Okay.
I would throw in a caution that if you're having discussion and doing decision making or at least considerations on the 15th, it would be extremely challenging to prepare a packet for the 8th that had the final resolution in it.
For the 22nd?
Yeah. We would want, because you'd be here Wednesday night potentially making changes if you anticipate that being a working session where you might make a change, we would want to finalize the resolution for your vote the next day for those packets for the 22nd.
Why don't we just play it safe and move it to the 12th?
It makes sense.
Are you okay with that, Debbie? Do you understand the concern? I mean,
well, I don't see if, you know, frankly, we'll have an SMP discussion, and any of the changes that we're likely to make, we will tell staff this is the kind of change we want, and we don't need to see it. I don't think we would need to see it again.
But they have to have it in the packet the next day.
No, they don't. There's a lot of stuff that isn't in the packet the very next day.
But so the resolution for the SMP would seem to be something that we would want to have the documentation available.
I don't see what the trouble with just moving it out.
All right.
But there is, and I'd like to hear from Debbie, because I think that's of concern, and certainly anyone else. I mean, I brought up that very personal thing almost as a joke.
I think it's important that we all be here for this.
I do, too, and I will be. So I'm committed to doing it, but if we suddenly can't.
I suggest if May 15th, seems we can't make the 22nd, then at that point we push it out.
But that's the problem. Anne needs to buy a plane. She needs to know so she can buy her ticket.
And is that not within your time frame? If I don't know. I don't know the date you're targeting.
The 22nd.
You were targeting the 22nd to take off. I
would not be here on the 22nd.
I didn't hear that.
I'm sorry, I wasn't.
Oh, I misunderstood. I thought that was the only day you could be here. So.
No, I will. If that's when the vote is, I will be here. I will not go to Denver.
I'm just saying, it matters to me a lot
wrong with the comment
to be here, and I will do that for sure. So I shouldn't get involved with these. You don't need to hear travel plans.
So I misunderstood. I thought the target was for the 22nd. I'm mm-hmm. hearing that it's not, so certainly moving to the 12th is fine.
Yeah, that's I misunderstood as
okay,
well.
So. Thank you. Thank you for checking.
And discussion sorry. On the 15th, then?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Paul, for wondering through something unclear on my part.
Any other comments on agendas further out?
Well, one of the things is that the public hearing is shown for 120 minutes on the 8th, and we've got it scheduled for 300. And the traffic signal ILA with the city of Bremerton is not going to happen that night.
Okay, any other agenda items? Debbie?
So just to note, if Deputy City Manager, I didn't, looking at the further out, I would like to see the impact fees be placed somewhere out. I'm not sure what the City Manager was targeting, when to bring that forward. Would like to get an update in terms of scheduling community meetings for economic development and for the water park waterfront park design.
Okay. Next week, the city manager is giving a report for the first and second quarters, and you could ask him to include those items, at least in his discussion for next week. In terms of when, if he can't discuss it, at least he can say, hey, this is when I think I can do it.
And I want to apologize. It looks like there's a column. Yeah, I would like to start because it's going to take a while to get those impact.
Right. That's so as part of his discussion for next week, let's have him address a schedule for those items.
Okay.
Okay.
And another item. In terms of listening to the March 14th Civil Service Commission meeting, their main frustration was that they are looking to fill an appointment. And so could we go ahead and whatever needs to be done in terms of... Excuse me?
Yeah, I mean, we've got applicants, so...
Okay. And whoever's in the rotation, if we could get that in play, that would be great.
I'll pass that on to the city clerk. I think she's.
And then the idea is that we will, in fact, bring that forward for a vote on the 22nd. Because didn't you say their meeting was the 9th or something like that?
Yeah.
They're kind of two separate independent things. Okay. They were going to have a discussion about their recommendations. Yeah. And what they said, they were looking for certainly diversity and. At this point, I think there were a number of lawyers, and they were hoping to mix it up a bit and have some various different backgrounds, HR person, ethnic diversity, as well as they have particular things that, listening to the discussion, we could pull from and possibly on our...
So you want it posted. Well, it'll go through the process. That's not
so. Okay. Anyway, just to let them know, it sounded like they were very frustrated with council, and personally, I didn't know that was out there. And I think there's a situation that we're in a transition right now. One employee was handling this, and we've transferred it over to a different employee, and I think maybe there might be the transition disconnect. Anyway,
I think this in this case, it was a question of since there was an ordinance in play that was moving along to change the appointment process. So I think the assumption was that this appointment would fall under that new approach. But it's absolutely fine to separate them, and you know it's at council's discretion. I'll let the city clerk know to go ahead and start the appointment process.
Okay.
And council, was there any interest in Suzuki Property Task Force?
Yeah,
do we need more information to come back, or could we consider
going
ahead with
that?
I'm interested as well.
And
anyone?
Okay.
Excellent.
Then
so
the three of us will be the ad hoc committee for and begin the discussion with HRB and other interested parties.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? I probably shouldn't. Let me just, I'm sorry, I am very interested in it. There's a possibility that the barn
might
be one of the groups you'd want to approach, and I think it would be better if I step aside.
Okay. Sarah said you'd volunteer.
Great. That's good. Thank you, Sarah.
And I think the barn has given that up.
Well, actually, I just got a phone call saying no, so that's why.
No.
Yeah.
Well, that's great that there's interest.
Ward, sorry. On behalf of the city clerk, could I put in a couple plugs? Would you, one of the members of that new ad hoc, please work with the city clerk to do the form?
Thank you.
So that we can continue to track that group. And then secondly, as we head into vacation season, if you would please try and remember to keep her notified when you make plans that will affect your attendance here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Well, I think one of the things that I brought up that does impact future agendas is trying to get some consensus on possibly carving out a month or 6 weeks in the middle of the summer when a lot of people are on vacation not to have any council meetings. And that's clearly something we need to coordinate with the city manager and get a consensus on, but I still want to bring that up as an idea.
I think there...
Sarah?
Well, I guess we'll talk to Doug. It seems like there's a lot to do this year.
Really does look like it, looking ahead at this agenda.
And maybe it's something that doesn't work.
So. You tried that last year, as I recall.
Okay. any more comments on the upcoming agendas? For the good of the order, how many resolutions do you have, Debbie?
I've got some events. Farmers Market launched last week. Mayor Bunkowski tossed... goat cheese, and I think a little girl caught it.
That's right.
It was awesome. So the farmers market is every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Town Square at City Hall. Come by for fresh vegetables, produce, local crafts, and starts for your garden. They also have live music and chef demonstrations. As I was coming to City Hall, I saw all of these young kids with instruments in hand, and I noticed the sign they had just put up, and this weekend is a Pops Special Orchestra Comedic, and Edge Improv is collaborating with the BI Musical Youth Orchestra, and they're putting on a musical comedy event, and Saturday it's at Saturday, April 20th at 7:30 and Sunday, April 21st at 3 p.m., we also have TNC's 14th annual Earth Day Community Fair, and that is from it's Saturday, April 20th, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Town and Country's Market's North parking lot. And the fair features exhibits from more than 20 local sustainable groups, activities for kids, a zero-waste lunch, and more. And there's also styrofoam and bubble wrap recycling. If you can't reuse or recycle them, then save these materials up and bring them in. And also the last event, Earth Day at Pritchard Park, is Sunday, April 21st from 1 to 3 p.m. And Weed Warriors, the Student Conservation Corps, Let's Pull Together, Bainbridge, Scotch, Broom, Control combined with Association of Bainbridge Communities for a couple hours of community stewardship activities, plus a guided walk at Pritchard Park. And the note also says, bring gardening gloves. So thank you.
Any other good of the order comments? Anne?
I had one to say that the North Ward meeting occurred last night, and there were 18 people there, and the conversation was almost exclusively about the shoreline management plan. We generated a list of issues, and astonishingly, through the course of the evening, covered most of them. There were certainly some questions about road preservation and that sort of thing, and we did not get to address those directly. But it was my opinion of the meeting was that it was very positive, and
the positive tone was absolutely supported by the fact that City Manager Doug Schultz was there. And it was very, very helpful. It was fun. I took it as sort of a show-and-tell time to be sure that he was introduced and that people had an opportunity to hear from him. But it was also very helpful, I think, to both Bob Scales and me to have his perspective as people asked about how our proposed plan compared to other jurisdictions that he was familiar with, and things like that, that he's particularly experienced and has a broad base of knowledge that he was able to share with people. So I think as hard as those conversations are when people have different opinions, it was handled, I thought, with grace by everybody that was there. So I thought it was very positive and reaffirmed the fact that it's nice to get together and have a conversation.
Thank you, Ann. Yet another one, Debbie.
Actually, you could take this one on. Central Ward. There, next Tuesday.
23rd.
23rd.
And are you bringing cookies?
And I will be. I will certainly bring cookies. It's at here at City Hall, and I believe Mayor Bunkowski is requested to join because he's an at-large council person, and the city manager will be here as well. So please come by City Hall Tuesday, April 23rd. Start time 7?
7.
7 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more comments? The meeting's adjourned.
5 minutes early, you did it.
3 minutes early, actually.